Hey, I am very excited to be here and at my first EMF camp. So thanks to everyone who's making this wonderful event happen. I often give technical talks at events like this, and this one is not technical. This one is just about my experiences starting an open source hardware company, Great Scott Gadgets. We make a number of things like the Ubertooth, which is a Bluetooth test tool, and HackRF, which is a software-defined radio platform, and a variety of other things that we're working on. And I kind of didn't really think about the fact that I would be starting an open source hardware company until it sort of happened. And I wanted to kind of tell the story, and maybe it would be helpful to people who are thinking about making a similar leap, perhaps. But sometimes folks ask me for advice about starting a business or something. And I say, well, you know, I don't know how much advice I have for you, but I can at least tell you how it went for me. And so that's what I'm doing. So my story, or the year that I'm talking about, starts in October of 2010 with TourCon 12. And this is an information security conference in San Diego. And I had kind of a busy year. It was the second time I taught my software-defined radio class there. And I gave a couple of talks as well. One of them was Ubertooth Zero, a preview. And I had designed this circuit board that was like the first PCB I ever designed. And it was called Ubertooth Zero. It was deliberately named Zero and not One because I intended to replace it. It was just kind of an initial prototype that could be made to demonstrate a Bluetooth sniffing function. And in particular, kind of the killer app of Ubertooth was that it can detect and identify non-discoverable Bluetooth devices. And this was a capability that that had been missing before. It had not been possible to detect non-discoverable Bluetooth devices prior to this without spending like $10,000 plus on test equipment. So I was pretty excited about it, and I wanted to show people what I was working on. And it was just a short work in progress kind of talk. But when I was there and showing this to people, a lot of my friends in the information security community started asking me, when can I buy it in shops? And I was like, I don't know. Originally when I started the Ubertooth project, I was trying to make something that people could make for themselves. I wanted it to be open source hardware, pieced together from off-the-shelf hardware. And it turned out that I ended up designing the thing kind of from scratch instead of piecing it together from other things. And so it turned out to be something that maybe would make sense to manufacture for people. And so I started thinking about that and thinking about what it would take to manufacture this thing for people. And this was all kind of a side project because I had a job at the Boulder Labs in Colorado doing wireless security research. And, you know, that was a pretty nice place to be. And I wasn't really looking to start a business. I just was looking to get this tool into the hands of people who could do something useful with it. So, but after TourCon, I started thinking seriously about starting a business and what that would mean and how I could manage to do that on the side and get this tool out to more people. Initially, that meant I would start kind of redesigning or refining the Ubertooth Zero design and working toward Ubertooth One. And I found this talk by Mitch Altman online, and Mitch, I believe, is here somewhere. So if you're listening, thank you, Mitch, because this talk that he had given at some event not too long before this had a video posted online, and I watched it, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. Maybe I could do this and kind of what he did and follow in his footsteps starting a hardware company, building something that I really enjoyed doing. And it's this talk in particular is full of more practical advice, I think, and probably more so than this talk today. So I would recommend it to you if you're interested in pursuing a similar path. He had a couple of particular insights that I thought were very interesting. One was, don't do business with people you don't like, which has been a guiding principle for me ever since. And it's worked out pretty well. And he really got me thinking about how the economics of running a business and how I would do pricing, for example. So the pricing is something that was super important for me to be thinking about at that particular time, because I was figuring out what would be entailed in the product itself and what it would cost to build it and how I would actually sell it. And one of the things that I considered was a reseller model. And in particular, I considered at least kind of three different distribution models. One being selling direct, like have a website and sell direct to people and ship things individually to direct retail sales. Another would be a reseller model, like a two-tier reseller model, where I would sell to resellers and then they would do the retail sales. And then the third would be a three-tier distribution model where I would sell to one or more distributors and then they would distribute things to resellers and they would sell them to other people. And I had some background working for companies in a three-tier kind of channel before, so that sort of made sense to me. But what didn't make sense was that this product was such a niche product that I didn't really think that a multi-tier distribution model really made any sense. There were very few retailers in the world who would likely be interested in carrying this product. So since it would be a fairly small number of resellers, I thought it made the most sense to do the two-tier model, where I would sell directly to resellers and then they would sell to the end users and do the retail sales. And that's been my model ever since. And one of the important reasons that I did that instead of trying to sell direct, which you know is more possible these days and than it used to be, one of the important considerations was that that I was trying to do this on the side. I had a day job, and I really wanted to minimize the amount of effort I had to do in order to make this a reality. My goal was just to put hardware in people's hands, not necessarily to, make a growing company, even though that later happened. And so I had a goal that I wanted to make this company a solo company. I didn't want to have to hire help. I didn't want to have to hire employees and so forth. I wanted it to be solo for as long as possible. And so I looked for opportunities to kind of outsource different things. So for example, manufacturing. I didn't do my own manufacturing. I outsourced that to a contract manufacturer. And then retail sales, I kind of outsourced that to resellers and so forth. And around that time, I was kind of getting excited about, well, hey, if I now that I know how to design circuit boards, it might be fun to design some other things too. And I had this thing called a Throwing Star Land Tap that I had made like 10 years previous, that was made by splicing together Ethernet cables. And it was super useful. I used it all the time personally. And I, like doing system administration and network administration and security stuff. And but one kind of frustrating thing about it is that whenever I would use it, I would have to use Ethernet couplers, like RJ45 couplers. And so it ends up being a lot more unwieldy than it looks because of the couplers. And I thought, hey, now that I know how to design circuit boards, I could change this design and make a circuit board and install female connectors instead of having male plugs on the thing. And so I made the Throwing Star Land Tap, and this was a kit that I designed, but at first I just started printing circuit boards and started handing them out as business cards, and I still hand these out as business cards. The and I have some here. If you know, if you see me around the camp, hit me up for one. But I thought, well, if I'm going to have a company that sells a product, maybe I'll have two products, and so I was looking into maybe manufacturing the Throwing Star Land Tap as a kit, which I did end up doing later. And that's, you know, a pretty easy manufacturing job since it's just making the PCBs and then grabbing a few components and sticking them in a bag. So ShmooCon was in the following January, and it was at the end of January. And this was kind of a good timing for me because it was about the amount of time I needed to finish Ubertooth 1, which was the refined version of Ubertooth 0. And I gave this talk, Project Ubertooth, Building a Better Bluetooth Adapter. And it was a talk that was very much about the project of building Ubertooth and how I came to build Ubertooth and the challenges that I had, like learning electronics so that I could build Ubertooth, and all about the Ubertooth project, primarily from a technical standpoint. And so this talk today is actually kind of a sequel to that talk. That was about the technical project that then led me to start Great Scott Gadgets. And so this talk is about how Great Scott Gadgets came to be. And one of the things that I talked about in that talk is how I started Great Scott Gadgets as a fake company, because I was just trying to social engineer like part manufacturers. I just wanted to try to get like free samples and data sheets and stuff. And So I just sort of invented this company. The first name I thought of was Great Scott Gadgets, and I registered a domain name and put up a website and started sending emails from that domain and started trying to hit up manufacturers for documentation and stuff, and it totally did not work at all. But I started that, and then when people started asking me later about like would I sell them Uber Teeth, I said, well, you know, I sort of have this company, and as an experiment, I decided to take this design that I made, Ubertooth 1, which really was this pretty much the same thing as Ubertooth 0, just refined, and I decided to try to go into business with it. And this is actually these are slides from that talk. And at the time, this slide was about how I knew nothing about electronics and how I had to just start from nothing and learn electronics so that I could do the Ubertooth project. But it's also highly relevant to running a business because I really didn't know a whole lot about running a business either. And I made a very deliberate choice that if I were going to bother going into business to produce this thing, that my business would be dedicated to open source hardware. That everything that I had ever done in my life or anything I'd ever done in my career that I was proud of was something that I did with the help of open source software. And so to me, open source is just the right thing to do. But that was, for me, a very deliberate choice that was one particular thing that I would not compromise on. Every other aspect of running a business, I knew nothing, and I would admit that I was an idiot, and just, you know, whatever I need to learn, I would try to learn, and I would try to learn from my mistakes. And I think it was important to kind of have that mental clarity, that delineation between here's what I'm unwilling to compromise on. I am willing to compromise and learn on everything else. I don't want to have preconceived notions about how this is going to go. And I think that was kind of helpful. So I started using this thing called Kickstarter, and it was kind of newish at the time. I had only heard about it during this period of time when people were asking me if they could buy Ubertooth. And so I put Ubertooth on Kickstarter and launched it at the time of ShmooCon. The funding goal was that green line across the screen there. And so like I announced that it was I launched it like on Saturday morning at ShmooCon, and then Monday morning it just took off. And I think by Tuesday evening it was funded or something. And I thought it was kind of interesting how it looks like, if you look at the plot of the pledges that came in for the Kickstarter campaign, that it was sort of exponential growth looking at first until about the time that it hit the pledge goal, and then it was very linear after that. And that's a pretty common looking curve. I've seen other crowdfunded projects have kind of similar results. They don't always look like this, but it's a fairly common looking sort of thing for successfully funded, crowdfunded projects. But it kind of made me think a couple of things. One was, you know, if I had set the goal higher, would it have had a longer period of exponential growth? Like, did I miss out on things? But I don't think that was really the right conclusion to draw from this. I've later learned setting a pledge goal is really a tricky thing, and setting it high is not necessarily a good idea. But I did make a mistake here. I set the goal at $16,000, and it turned out that I really needed about twice that. And so, as it turned out, I did get more than twice that, so I was totally fine. But what if I had been funded at exactly $16,000? What if I had just barely met my pledge goal? I might have had real problems actually bringing this product to market. So I made a mistake here, but I got lucky anyway that I had enough funding to get past what Nate from Spark Fund has called the pit of despair, which is that kind of middle ground where you have enough interest in your product to make it seem like you should be going into mass production, but you don't actually don't have enough funding to achieve mass production. So I got over that threshold despite the fact that I set my goal too low. I should have set it about double what I did just to have the assurance that I wouldn't fall into the pit of despair. One of the things that I did for my Kickstarter backers was I said, hey, if you fund me at the highest pledge level, then I'll give you a special edition Ubertooth, and that will come with some extra things like an enclosure and some antennas and stuff. But I hadn't really figured out how I was going to make the special edition units. Like, would I make them separately, or maybe they would just come out of the regular batch and then I would just add stuff to those packages. But I thought it would be nice if I actually had the PCBs look different. And so I thought about maybe making them myself on a hot plate, but I had to make 50 of them, and that's a lot of work. Some folks from a company in Australia contacted me, and they were really interested in having kind of early access to Ubertooth, and they wanted I can't remember 10 or 20, something like that, and they were willing to pay extra to get them sooner, very soon. And I thought, well, you know, depending on how much they're willing to pay, maybe this is an opportunity. Maybe I could kind of get them to pay for the special edition production. And I'll make a few for the Australians, and I'll make the rest for the special edition people, and some or all of that special small production costs would be paid for by the Australians. And that seemed to kind of work out. And we made, I hired a different manufacturer, not the one that I'd been, so the manufacturer I had been talking to about manufacturing Ubertooth and that did manufacture Ubertooth was one that, I'd gotten referral to and was starting a relationship with, but it was brand new. I was a first time customer, so they didn't want to add on this extra little, 50 to 100 unit production. They want to do like 1,000 unit production or more. And so I hired some like random PCB assembler in China to do the white ones, which were the special editions. And I had 100 of them made, and they It was interesting because the CC2400. This sort of came up during the special edition. The CC2400 is a chip that is on the Ubertooth, and it's like the essential chip that accomplishes the Ubertooth function. And it was a part that a couple of things came up during the special edition production that I had not anticipated about having to do with this part. The first thing was my contract manufacturer for the special edition told me, hey, we can't get this part in China because of export restrictions. And I freaked out. And then they said, oh, and also it's end of life. And and I freaked out twice. And so it turned out that one or more of the distributors had incorrectly identified this part in their catalog as being export restricted from the US. It has other parts it's in a family of parts where other parts are export restricted and this one shouldn't be. And so I had to like sign paperwork saying that I was taking responsibility for this decision to ship it overseas and so forth, which was a little nerve-wracking, but it kind of made sense once I figured out what was going on. And it really wasn't end of life. It had just been recently marked not recommended for new designs, which means they're still manufacturing it. They just are recommending that you the manufacturer, Texas Instruments, is recommending that you look at other parts for brand new designs. And well, it was kind of a new design at the time, but when I had designed this into my product a few months earlier, it was not recommended for new designs. So I was kind of just at the edge of the thing, but I had no idea like how long it would be available. Like maybe there would never be a second production of Ubertooth 1. I didn't know. As it turns out, I'm still buying CC2400s in 2016. So they're still out there. But they're still being manufactured. But I was pretty scared about this at the time. It seemed like a huge risk for my venture. And I made these special edition boards. Or I had them made for me then, after I managed to get the CC2400s to China. And they came back to me, and I think about 30 of the 100 worked. So I had to sit down with a soldering iron and start fixing them. And so I had to make like the 50 for my Kickstarter backers and then the 10 or 20 for the Australians. And then there were a bunch more that never got working and are like still sitting in a drawer. So it was quite a task. I mean, the amount of effort I had to put into reworking those was probably, I don't know, 30 or 40% of the amount of effort I would have had to do if I had just made them from scratch myself, which maybe would have been a better choice at the time. So I kind of learned my lesson about just picking a random contract manufacturer online for small projects. They did, you know, pretty poor job of assembly and did zero testing, which at the time when I first hired them, I was just trying to get something done fast and I didn't really think about testing, even though I was thinking about testing for my main production. So I started around that time. So after the Kickstarter pledge period was over, but before I shipped, during that time where I was getting manufacturing going and such, I was starting to talk to people about maybe reselling Ubertooth 1 after the Kickstarter, because it seemed that there was enough interest in it that it might be worth keeping this product going and doing more than just a single production. And the first reseller that contacted me was Hack5, so Darren from Hack5. If you may be familiar with the video series online, they're really into education in the information security community, like helping new people get into InfoSec and hacking. And so they were in the process of starting an online store. And he said, hey, we're going to be starting a store, and I think Ubertooth would be good to have in the store. And I said, yeah, that that's a good idea. Let's try to make that happen. And I thought, well, if I'm going to make that happen with Hack 5, maybe I should have some other resellers too. And so the first one that I thought of, the first reseller I thought of to approach was SparkFun, which is kind of a different target market. Hack 5 targets folks in the InfoSec community, and SparkFun targets folks in the electronics hobby community. And SparkFun also happens to be in my home state of Colorado, so I'm local to them, and I met a couple of people there at the time, and I actually had taken a class there on SMT soldering, like solder paste stenciling, a few months prior. And so I contacted the director of engineering at SparkFun and said, hey, I'm coming out with this thing. Do you have any interest in carrying it? And they kind of took a flyer on it. It's kind of an unusual product for them because it's a bit expensive compared to other wireless development platforms of comparable size and complexity that they carry. But it sells well for them. And I think that has to do with the special function that it is capable of monitoring Bluetooth devices. So that worked out, and those two were my first resellers that I kind of got signed up and took orders from to start filling immediately after the Kickstarter units were sold. So meanwhile, I was pretty excited about this whole Kickstarter thing being successful, and I was just incredibly grateful to my backers who had pledged to support this project. And one thing that I decided to do just as an extra thank you was, hey, I was putting this Throwing Star LandTap kit together, so why don't I just give a free one to everybody who gets an Ubertooth? Because they're pretty low cost to manufacture, so I could just kind of roll that into the package, no problem. So I actually had these things produced and had those available to sell to my resellers. Even though it's a very low cost thing, it was nice to have two products in my catalog instead of one. And then I actually shipped these packages to my backers in May of 2011. So at the time, I thought my pledge period for crowdfunding was basically the whole month of February, kind of the end of January to the end of February. And then it took me until I think late May when I was able to ship. And I thought that I was way behind. Like, this was I really wanted to have shipped them sooner. But as it turns out, crowdfunded hardware projects have a track record that's actually a whole lot worse than that in terms of delivering in a timely fashion. So going from the end of February till the end of May was really not that bad at all, especially considering that it was the first time I'd ever done volume manufacturing of anything. It was pretty successful overall. And I think that a big part of why it was successful was because the version that I manufactured was identical to the version that I showed at ShmooCon. I made no changes. It was a bare board, and it was functional. And the design, I had already gone through a couple of design revisions. Significantly, from Ubertooth 0 to Ubertooth 1 was a major revision. And when I got it working for ShmooCon, I was done. I was like, okay, this is it. This is what I'm going to ship. This is what I put on Kickstarter. And I didn't have to do any extra design or changes to design during the manufacturing process, which I think I attribute maybe the speed of production and delivery primarily to that. So the way that I kind of modeled how I would be bootstrapping this business is that I got like $50,000 from Kickstarter, and that was enough to build 1,000 Ubertooth ones and then have a little extra money so that I could do things like throwing Star LandTap kits and have a little buffer. And then half of those had to go to my Kickstarter backers. And then the other half were available to resellers. And so all the money from Kickstarter pretty much went into making inventory. And then half of that inventory I was able to sell to resellers. And then the money I got from those was enough to fund the second production of 1,000 Ubertooth ones. And this kind of worked. This basically was how I bootstrapped the business. And it meant, number one, it meant that I did not have to seek any kind of outside investment at all. And that's super important. I was the sole owner of Gray Scott Gadgets, and I remain the sole owner of Gray Scott Gadgets. And that's very important to me because I can run the business the way I want to, like having open source be such a high priority. So, this process of bootstrapping, you know, it worked pretty well, but it the reality of cash flow is, a lot trickier than it kind of looks on paper like this. This is sort of a simplified view. Another significant thing is the pricing that I put on Kickstarter was close to the eventual retail price. I estimated what the retail price would be through resellers, and then I used that as my retail price or my Kickstarter price. And that really was important because, I didn't just collect enough money from Kickstarter to build the 500 Ubertooth that I needed for my Kickstarter backers. I got twice that. And so that allowed me to bootstrap my business. It also was a fair price because actually it was slightly less than what people later were paying for the same product through resellers. And it was, it kind of set an expectation of what the price of this product was. And I think that's important too. So people often ask me, especially in that first couple of years after this happened, people would ask me for Kickstarter advice a lot, people who were trying to launch their own Kickstarters, and especially hardware projects, because there weren't very many. Ubertooth was actually one of the earlier hardware projects that existed on Kickstarter, and it was, at the time it was funded, it was the highest funded hardware project that had happened on Kickstarter. Obviously now they've, gone through the roof, but at the time it was quite the thing. And so people kind of came out of the woodwork to ask me like, hey, what do I need to do here? How do I need to price my product? And do you have any advice for Kickstarter? And, I don't know. I probably gave some bad advice, but one piece of advice that I kind of started thinking about and continue to give to this day is to do contingency planning. And think about what will happen if you get funded to certain amounts. Like if you get funded to $1 less than your pledge goal, how will you feel about that? Will you feel relieved that, oh good, I don't have to go into production without proper backing? That would be a good feeling to have. What if you get funded to $1 more than your pledge goal? Will you be excited that you can do it? Or will you be thinking, oh no, I should have asked for more? Think about, what if you get 1,000 times your pledge goal? Are you going to be screwed? Is there just like no way you could possibly handle that? 'Cause all of these things are possible, and it's completely unpredictable. Well, maybe not entirely unpredictable, but you must accept the fact that any outcome could happen. And if you think through, if you plan for the various contingencies for how much funding you get, then that will help you to set your correct pledge level. And maybe a more concise statement is just to say, set your pledge level to exactly what you need, no more, no less. Because if you set it too high, people will look at that and think, well, they don't want to support this project because their aspirations are too lofty. And if it's too low, you can get yourself in the pit of despair and so forth. So as I said, I set mine probably too low, but I got lucky. And I should have set it up around 30K. I set it at 16K. It turned out I got enough to make it work anyway. So then kind of that summer, I started working on what might be Ubertooth 2. And this is a little prototype board called Artichoke that uses a different chip instead of the CC2400, because I had no idea whether or not the CC2400 would continue to be available. As it turns out, I have some prototypes of this board like sitting in a drawer that are still sitting in a drawer because the CC2400 is still available, so I haven't felt a real need to replace it even 5 years later. But I started doing more electronic design, starting thinking about more projects and kind of how the future of Great Scott Gadgets would go, even though I was doing this on the side. But I was getting super busy, especially as I started selling more units and getting more resellers and getting more support emails and so forth. I ended up in July of 2011 quitting my day job at the Boulder Labs. And this was a rather significant decision for me. I had a nice job working for the government doing research, which I love, and I was leaving it to dedicate my time to an open source hardware company. And I was basically forced into this decision by getting too busy with Great Scott Gadgets. And I was working nights and weekends on Great Scott Gadgets. And then during the week, I would go to my job at the Boulder Labs. And it was becoming too much. And I was forced with the decision to choose one or the other. I had to decide, I'm either going to stop doing Great Scott Gadgets or I'm going to stop working at the labs. And I decided to stop working at the labs and give it a shot as a business owner. So at that time, I started kind of taking this business more seriously. Obviously, I had to take it more seriously because it had to become a steady living for me. And one of the things that I thought of when I started taking it more seriously is that maybe I needed a mission statement. And this seemed kind of weird to me at first because I'd been in companies where they would have some sort of a fluffy mission statement, and it just seemed like bullshit to me. And a lot of times it is. For example, in the US, publicly traded companies are actually required by law to maximize their shareholder value. So whatever they tell you their mission statement is, their real mission is to maximize shareholder value. And that they don't have a choice in the matter if they're a publicly traded company. Whereas I was a sole owner of my own company, and so I had the ability to choose whatever mission I wanted. And personally, that was extremely important to me. And so I chose as a mission that the mission of Great Scott Gadgets is to put exciting new tools into the hands of innovative people. And that putting tools into people's hands is the goal of business has been a guiding principle that has really helped me at many occasions over the years. There have been all sorts of times when I've thought I've had an opportunity or a business decision to make, and I could take the company in one or two or more directions, and I've been able to make that decision because I thought which direction meets the mission of the business most closely. It's really helped me a lot. And I also kind of wrote down some guiding principles to support this mission. And one of those guiding principles, kind of the number one guiding principle, is open source. That everything Great Scott Gadgets ever does, hardware, software, content, whatever, everything we produce will be open source. And that is very important, that we can reach more people, we can put better tools into more people's hands especially innovative people who many of whom appreciate open source and will take advantage of the benefits of open source, that we can reach more people by making everything we do open source. But we can also reach a lot of people just by selling stuff, right? Like not everybody wants to buy things, not everybody wants to build things themselves. A lot of people just want to buy something that works. And so by doing both consistently, we can reach the most people. And also some other guiding principles to support the mission were education, that it's really important for the company to produce educational resources and to support educational opportunities where for people to learn how to use exciting new tools, and research and innovation. Like I don't want to spend my time and resources building something that somebody's built before. I want to build something new that is innovative in some way that meets a need that hadn't been met before, for example. And also, one of my guiding principles is just to be myself. I've seen certain companies, like small companies, solo companies, for example, that kind of put on an air of being bigger than they really are, and that always looks kind of funny to me, and I decided early on that I was just going to deliberately just be myself, and my persona is tied to the business, and just live with that, and be okay with being a one-person company or a very small company that is represented by me personally. Around this time, I think it was the first time I did a Google search and stopped. Getting, did you mean Sabretooth? When I typed Ubertooth, which I thought, you know, was a good sign that Ubertooth was a real thing once it stopped suggesting Sabretooth. And I started getting more and more emails from people like idea people who say things like, hey, I have this great idea for a product. I just need help bringing it to market, or I just need engineering or whatever. Those people don't really have a clue. There's kind of a perception, and I could go into this for hours, and that I won't. But there's kind of a perception among certain folks that there's great value in an idea for a product or an idea for a project. And one of the things that I was realizing around this time was that, especially as I was getting approached by folks who wanted help with things, was that the value in an idea is really how much work you put into the implementation, and how much effort you put into building something and delivering it. And so this was kind of tied into my concept of open source, and like sometimes people ask me, like, okay, so you don't do your own manufacturing, and you don't do your own retail sales, and you give away all your designs for everything you produce. Like, what do you have? And I think what we have at Gray Scott Gadgets is the effort that we put into our projects, and the effort that we put into supporting our tools, and to promoting them and educating people about them. And that the more that we put into building open source hardware and software, the more value there is in Gray Scott Gadgets. Like, the more we give away, the more we get back. And that has really worked out over time. Today there are four of us working for the company, not just one, and we have a brand new lab that we just moved into, and we're still growing 4 years later. In fact, we went through a period of time, or actually more than 4 years later, we went through a period of time where, like, 5 years in a row we doubled revenue, which is kind of, you know, plenty of growth for me. Thank you very much. I don't really want to grow faster than that. So my year ended at TourCon 13 in 2011, this particular year I'm talking about. And by this time, Gray Scott Gadgets was, you know, a real thing. It was still a one-person company. I hadn't been able, you know, didn't have enough revenue to hire anybody yet, but I was able to keep pretty busy. And one thing that I really kept busy with at this particular time was I
volunteered to design a badge, electronic badge for TourCon 13. And the original conception here was that we would give all the attendees of TourCon an Ubertooth. But unfortunately, we didn't really have the funding to make that happen. So we didn't, you know, the Ubertooth, I tried really hard to try to slim down the design to make it like the bare minimum cost to accomplish the Ubertooth function, and didn't really get to the cost, you know, the budget that we had available for an electronic badge. So I ended up making an electronic badge that had the radio chip, but didn't have the other stuff. And so it had a radio chip and it had a super low cost microcontroller, just the lowest cost thing I could possibly get, and a bunch of LEDs. And it did a 2.4 gigahertz spectrum analyzer function on across the LEDs, which was kind of cool. And then it had this other section that you could populate if you wanted to, that would turn it into an Ubertooth. And making it modular like that, where like it would have one function, but then you could modify it to be this other function, ended up increasing the complexity a whole lot. And I had like two microcontrollers I had to negotiate with each other about controlling the other thing. And like, it was ridiculous. I worked maybe 6 weeks for about 12 hours a day, 7 days a week on this project, which was totally volunteer just for fun, just to give people at a conference. And like, from one standpoint, it was like, wow, how did I waste that much time? But on the other standpoint, from the other point of view, it was actually a pretty rewarding experience, because at that time in the life of Great Scott Gadgets, I had quite a bit of time on my hands. And also, some great things came out of it. Like the person who won, I had a couple little contests. There was a badge hacking contest, and then I also threw an Easter egg in there, and I had a contest for who could find the Easter egg. And people were doing things like reverse engineering binary from microcontroller that had a CPU architecture that they'd never seen before. And it was amazing. And the person who ended up winning the badge contest was Mike Ryan, whom many of you may know now because he's kind of famous for his Bluetooth low energy research, security research. And he won the badge hacking contest, and so as a prize, I gave him a fully populated badge that worked as an Ubertooth, and that was his first Ubertooth, and that's when he got started doing Bluetooth low energy stuff. And now he's gone on to do great things for Bluetooth low energy security and awareness of it, and he's contributed back to the Ubertooth project a whole lot. So just that one person that I reached through this crazy badge project ended up kind of paying dividends long term, and I thought that was pretty cool. So this was the theory. Last thing to leave you with here is kind of, this is the theory of how the business was bootstrapped that year, but this was the practice. And like, cash flow is hard. I've heard it said that you shouldn't really expect to make any money your first year in business. And looking back at that year, I'm like, yeah, I didn't really make any money. But I was able to create something that was sustainable and that met the mission that I set out for me. And financially, actually, the picture is a little better than you see there, because what is not represented there is inventory. And I started, of course, with nothing, and I ended the year with inventory on the shelf. So it totally worked out. I was able to bootstrap the business, kind of following the model that I set out when I did Kickstarter pricing and everything. And now, you know, a few years later, we're still growing. We have more products. We're, you know, an order of magnitude plus larger in terms of revenue and everything else. And we're still striving to achieve our mission of putting, you know, exciting new tools into the hands of people. And so I'm very happy to say that this all worked out. And that was my Ubertooth year. Thank you very much for coming.